Welcome to History Frogcast, a production of the TCU History Department, where we put the life and times of horned frogs into their rightful place in world history.
I'm about that riff ram, bazoo, liggity liggity, zoo zoo, ooh wah, wahoo, give them hell, TCU, riff ram, bazoo, liggity liggity, zoo zoo, ooh wah, wahoo, give them hell.
1969. The Vietnam War rages, and a nation holds its collective breath. Young men across America faced a fateful date, one that would determine their future in ways they could hardly imagine. Imagine for a moment being on the cusp of your future and your education at Texas Christian University. But then, fate calls your number, the Vietnam War draft. We're about to embark on a journey back in time, into the heart of a turbulent era. Today, we have a story that's rooted in the history of TCU in the Vietnam War, a story of two students and so many others who were among the first chosen in the 1969 lottery draft. Our sources for this remarkable tale, they're closer to home than you may think. Our research team, which is just me, has been working tirelessly to uncover these documents in the bowels of the TCU library. What have we found? Decades-old archives of the TCU student newspapers and years books featuring exclusive interviews from the men themselves, Brian Dahm and Robbie Moore. Their first thoughts, as all of their plans, dreams, and potentially their lives were put in jeopardy. We also have a very special expert guest, Dr. Amy Rutenberg of Iowa State, who will be walking us through today's most important questions. So fasten your seatbelts, listeners, as we begin another journey to the past. I'm your host, Gavin McGuffin. You're listening to The Frogcast. So, the Vietnam War. Obviously, people are getting drafted, and they're not very happy about it. Part of this disillusionment is due to the draft system which was in place before the Vietnam War. What we know is that the draft boards prior to 1969 were extremely localized. Each individual community decides who should be conscripted based upon certain criteria which would have been subjective in each locality. But in 1969, the system changed. Our podcast is going to lay out as best we can the broader theme of being conscripted or the threat of being drafted for college students on college campuses. We found that this coincides with other broad themes in American history, namely those surrounding class struggle and race relations. Through our expert interview and her book, we know that prior to the implementation of the lottery system, the institution of the draft had been largely left to localities. The nation had to decide who would be better used as soldiers and as civilians. Even during the war, life on the home front must go on, and therefore, to keep the society running, you would need to have ample supply of a professional/managerial class. Necessarily, this meant providing ample exemptions for college-educated Americans, which for a number of reasons primarily consisted of white middle-class men. Therefore, the draft system that existed prior to 1969 was characterized by iniquity, breeding kind of resentment and struggles we are still familiar with in a lot of ways. We asked Dr. Rutenberg what the theories behind deferments were before the 1969 lottery system.
The theory behind it was that local board members, because they came from the local community, they would really have a good understanding of what it meant to be essential in the local community versus whether the community could spare that man to go into service. So all of the different deferments that were available around occupation, around mostly occupation, but around some of the other ones too, like they're making a judgment about what does it mean to be essential and does this person need to be here or do they not? Whether that actually worked in practice is a totally different story.
Right. I think we all have an understanding of the frustrations around the old draft system. It told people that they were essential or they weren't. Basically, the government is telling you, if you're the one that gets drafted, that your life is less essential than another person's. Over time, this leads to people just not registering with selective services, or burning their draft cards, or whatever, because as we know, the deferment system favored those who were educated and in professional white-collar careers. And at this time, those fields were dominated by middle-class white men. So you can see how inequity might ensue. Such resentment and anti-government sentiment led to cultural artifacts like the song Fortunate Son, which outlines the frustrations of poor and working class Americans during this Vietnam War period. Let's have a quick listen. A lot of people think that this is a pro-American song, but really, it was made to be an anti-draft or anti-government song. Just listen to the lyrics. Some folks are born with a silver spoon in hand. But I'm not a senator's son or a millionaire's son. I'm not one of the fortunate ones. The singer is complaining about the draft policies which led to working-class young men to have to go fight and die at a higher rate than their white-collar counterparts. Now, this is not to say that the people on the draft boards were just super racist or classist necessarily. That would not be an accurate depiction of what was really going on. However, this is pretty much how it played out based on the decisions they had to make. Our interview with Dr. Rutenberg shed some light on why deferments were given out in this way.
There are so many men who start coming of age as the baby boomers start coming of age. There is no way the military wants all of these people. But if you're going to keep a draft on, and you have such a tiny number of eligible people being taken, then people start to complain. You start getting bad press. So one of the things that the Selective Service settled on is, okay, the more deferments we can give out, the better, because then we have a much smaller pool of eligible men who wouldn't be deferred, and a bigger percentage of that pool will end up in the military. So we'll look better. So that's one way that that functioned. But the other then is, all right, so who do we keep out of the pool? Who do we keep not eligible for military service? And the answer there ended up being students, men working in STEM fields, engineers, you know, scientists, and eventually teachers. And the reason for that was the Cold War. If the U.S. is in a space race and the U.S. is trying to develop technology to win any kind of one-upsmanship with communism or the Soviet Union, then the places that were seen as most important are jobs that are going to require a college education, fields that can be defined as national security, physicists, doctors, scientists, anyone who can build the next bomb, but also develop the next penicillin, right? Anything in that direction. And so that's going to require deferring college students who first got a deferment during the Korean War, ironically enough. During the Korean War, the Defense Department was desperate for more men, but that's when the Selective Service put in the student deferment.
So we have a whole series of policies which make it easier for middle class and elite college educated men to avoid service legally. Not only that, they use these exemptions and deferments in very large numbers. In our interview, Dr. Rutenberg said that it got to the point where men in this particular class began to look at those who were unable to avoid military service as suckers. I think you guys understand how this would breed resentment, especially from men of color and those who largely make up the working class of this era. When the Vietnam War escalated in 1965, the number of men needed escalated. The many loopholes and inequities became apparent, especially in the heat of the civil rights movement. Because of this, the days of the old draft were over. It was only a matter of time before the government would be forced to change it in favor of a new system. Here's what Dr. Rutenberg had to say on this matter.
Opinion begins to turn against the draft. The government is forced to have to deal with that public opinion. So there are a series of executive orders, regulations, and then eventually laws or revisions to the law that end up changing the deferment structure, that end up changing who can be called and how. And then the move to a lottery was part of that attempt to undermine backlash and an attempt to make things a little bit more fair. So the movement to the lottery happens in late 69, and the first men are drafted based on the lottery in 1970. But at the same time, there are attempts to pull back on the deferments. So you have like all of these moving pieces all at once. The lottery essentially, combined with the limiting of deferments, essentially did what it was supposed to do. It made service a bit more equitable, but it didn't end protest because by 1970, people were much more against the war than they were for it.
The lottery system is just how it sounds. This was a national draft eliminating many of the protections professionals and college students may have had in the past. They drew 365 birthdays one at a time, and depending on the order your birthday was called, you would be assigned a lower or higher draft number. The higher the better, because that means your draft number would have a lesser chance of being called, and therefore a lesser chance of going to war. This would have been a really interesting day in America, especially on college campuses, because everyone's fate was just up in the air. We asked Dr. Rutenberg to describe what it may have looked like to be a college student on draft day.
People, especially people of the right age group, clustered around TVs all over the place. On college campuses, it was in frat houses, in dorms. They clustered around TVs and lounges, right, to get this information. And there are a lot of oral histories out there and recollections of people talking about like the weird environment of that night. Because, you know, as birthdays came up, there are people with very low numbers. If you're up to about 140, 150, you could be pretty sure you were going to go. If you were in the 300s, you could be pretty sure you were not going to go. And so, and then there's like a gray zone, depending on what draft calls would have been. So you have like, consider a fraternity. Everybody's sitting around in the common space watching TV. And some of these men are getting low numbers and some are getting high numbers and some are getting in the middle numbers. And like, you know, there's a sense of relief. There's a sense of fear. There's a sense of being stuck. It was a tough night for men and for women, right? Because the women have friends, they have boyfriends, they have husbands. And one of the things that happens at the same time you move to the lottery is that there were limits on new fatherhood deferments, limits on new student deferments, limits on new occupational deferments. That so the means that these men might have used in the past to get out of service, they don't have anymore. Those pathways are being cut off. And so then that leads to other kinds of choices, right? If they don't want to serve or they don't agree with the war or whatever, then the choices they have to make at that point maybe feel more dire than they would have in 1965, where if you got married or if you went to college, you could avoid service. But by 1970, you're looking at filing a conscientious objector, deferment, fleeing the country.
North Vietnamese know that they cannot achieve their aggressive purposes by force. There may be hard fighting before a settlement is reached, but I can assure you it'll yield no victory to the communist cause.
The audio you just heard is from former President Lyndon B. Johnson. He's addressing Congress, talking about the escalation in the Vietnam War. At the same time, this draft was going on in that year. We see a correlation here between the escalation of the Vietnam War and the escalation in the draft policies of the United States. If you were a student during this time, you must have felt super uncertain about what's going to happen to you, because in the past, the president and the secretary of state, they had all been saying that, well, we're not going to pursue a full conflict in Vietnam, but in recent years we had, and now the war is escalating, it's getting more violent, we're committing more troops, and as a result, you know, college students who were getting drafted or their draft number had been called, they face a lot of uncertainty about what was going to happen to them in their lives. We asked ourselves, what would it be like to experience this? Well, the answer depends on the region and demographic of your university. At places like Berkeley, there were public demonstrations and outrage from the student population. Meanwhile, at places like TCU, there seemed to be even a lighthearted disposition towards the draft, with the student newspaper, or the SCIF, openly making jokes towards themselves and those with lower draft numbers. Dr. Rutenberg commented that there would have been a very uncertain atmosphere on campus, where some people are celebrating and others are coming to grips with the reality that they may go to war. If your draft number was called in 1969 and you were a college student, you could not have gotten a student deferment anymore. You would possibly be allowed to finish out the year, and you could have gotten, say, a medical deferment. You could go see a psychiatrist for a mental health deferment, apply to medical school to get a deferment of some kind. You know, there were ways to get around the draft, but definitely far fewer than before the lottery system. TCU campus reactions to the 1969 draft are actually recorded in the SCIF, which is our student newspaper. TCU students were opinionated on the war, but when the draft came along, it almost seemed to be a celebratory occasion, on the macro scale at least. In the student newspaper, the writers were making jokes about, quote, winning the lottery, and they used anecdotes to make the draftees feel better. Even Dahm and Moore seemed to make light of the occasion, posing for funny photos and mixing in humor with their comments of uncertainty. Dahm specifically commented that he wasn't sure if he was in favor of the war, and Robbie Moore also said that he didn't want to come off as an anti-government, anti-draft person. He was actually a member of the TCU Young Republicans Club. But he didn't seem exactly enthused about the whole thing, but he definitely wasn't distraught. And he was participating in the jokes and posing for pictures alongside Brian Dahm. So at this point, if your draft number was called as a college student, you're probably going. I asked what the next steps would have looked like for college students who had been drafted.
The term of service for draftees was 2 years. It was very common to spend one of those years in Vietnam. So you would go in, do your 6 months of training, do a year in Southeast Asia, and then wrap up that term of service, either in Europe or back in the United States. The question becomes, how does that experience change you? For some people, it's going to focus them more on what they want out of the rest of their lives, right? Maybe the experience helps them mature a little bit, make some decisions. For others, it's going to maybe push them in an entirely new direction. There is no particular barrier other than money to returning to school, and the credits that someone who was a college student to start with didn't vanish. So when they came back, they could pick up. The question is, do they want to?
More college students than ever were drafted through the lottery system. It was indeed a much fairer system than in previous eras. However, now that more elite folks in society had a taste of getting drafted and going to war, things changed in the country. Not necessarily directly from their experiences, but through a changing of attitudes gradually and over time. My last question with Dr. Rutenberg was about how the lottery draft during the Vietnam War and people's experiences with it on the college campus changed the national conversation about conscription in the post-war era. She had quite the answer.
The Vietnam era in general has a huge impact on how those discussions have played out since. I'm not sure the college experience had a huge impact by itself, other than the current incarnation of the Selective Service has very clearly said there will not be student deferments if there's ever a draft in the future, because it was such a disaster during the Vietnam era. But in the more generalized sense, the mass protest of that era definitely helped turn the military to the desire for an all-volunteer system, which we've had for the last 50 years, and also makes policymakers very wary of having a mass draft or universal service. The interesting thing about universal service is that the debate resurfaces more or less once a decade. There is no guarantee that the AVF will be viable. And so at various times, there has been discussion, oh, we should have universal service. And then those discussions are translated and connected to, you know, the fact that so few people serve, that there's no opportunity to develop patriotism, that there becomes a bigger divide between civilians and military folks. And it all becomes connected to that.
Today, we've been able to zoom out and look at the big picture regarding U.S. conscription policy and how it affected college students. What we found is that the early war looked very different for people who were of lower socioeconomic backgrounds. The draft lottery was implemented to be a more fair system of conscription, and as we mentioned, it was in many ways. However, due to exemptions and deferments, there was still broad resentment stemming from inequities which had not been fully resolved. We started our inquiry into this topic because of Brian Dahm and Robbie Moore, both of whom were TCU students in 1969, and both of whom were selected first overall in the draft lottery. It is unclear what happened to them during the war and after, but I was hoping that through this research and podcast, we might be able to get a better understanding of what the draft would have been like for these two young men, and therefore give us in the history department an opportunity to honor their story and many like theirs. Before we wrap things up here, I have a very important announcement. Join us next week, where we will hear from Senna and Hunter. Their podcast will focus on Vietnam War refugees They will cover a variety of topics and even speak to people who have firsthand accounts of the war. Until next time, I have been Gavin McGuffin, and thank you for listening to the History Frogcast. TCU,
riff ram, give 'em hell, TCU. Until next time, TCU, riff ram, y'all. TCU, riff ram.